That was his ruin. I observe, my good Fangorn, said Gandalf, that with great care you say dwelt, was, grew. What about is? Is he dead?
No, not dead, so far as I know, said Treebeard. But he is gone. Yes, he is gone 7 days. I let him go. There was little left of him when he crawled out. And as for that worm creature of his, he was like a pale shadow. Now do not tell me, Gandalf, that I promised to keep him safe, for I know it. But things have changed since then, and I kept him until he was safe, safe from doing any more harm. You should know that above all I hate the caging of live things, and I will not keep even such creatures as these caged beyond great need. A snake without fangs may crawl where he will.
You may be right, said Gandalf, but this snake had still one tooth left, I think. He had the poison of his voice, and I guess that he persuaded you, even you, Treebeard, knowing the soft spot in your heart. Well, he's gone, and there's no more to be said. But the Tower of Orthonk now goes back to the king to whom it belongs, though maybe he will not need it. That will be seen later, said Aragorn. But I will give to Ents all this valley to do with as they will, as long as they keep a watch upon Orthonk and see that none enter it without my leave.
It is locked, said Treebeard. I made Saruman lock it and give me the keys. Quickbeam has them.
Quickbeam bowed like a tree bending in the wind and handed to Aragorn two great black keys of intricate shape, joined by a ring of steel. Now I thank you once more, said Aragorn, and I bid you farewell. May your forest grow again in peace. When this valley is filled, there is room and to spare west of the mountains where once you walked long ago. Treebeard's face became sad.
Forests may grow, he said. Woods may spread, but not Ents. There are no Entings.
Yet maybe there is now more hope in your search, said Aragorn. Lands will lie open to you eastward that have long been closed. But Treebeard shook his head and said,
It is far to go, and there are too many men there in these days. But I am forgetting my manners. Will you stay here and rest a while? And maybe there are some that would be pleased to pass through Fangorn Forest and so shorten their road home.
He looked at Celeborn and Galadriel. But all save Legolas said that they must now take their leave and depart either south or west. Come, Gimli, said Legolas. Now by Fangorn's leave I will visit the deep places of the Entwood and see such trees as are nowhere else to be found in Middle-earth. You shall come with me and keep your word, and thus we will journey on together to our own lands in Mirkwood and beyond. To this Gimli agreed, though with no great delight, it seemed. Here then at last comes the ending of the Fellowship of the Ring, said Aragorn. Yet I hope that ere long you will return to my land with the help that you promised.
We will come, if our lords allow it, said Gimli. Well, farewell, my hobbits. You should come safe to your homes now, and I shall not be kept awake for fear of your peril. We will send word when we may, and some of us may yet meet at times, but I fear that we shall not all be gathered together ever again.
Then Treebeard said farewell to each of them in turn, and he bowed 3 times slowly and with great reverence to Celeborn and Galadriel.
It is long, long since we met by stock or by stone. Ah, Vanema, Vanema Leon Nostari, he said. It is said that we should meet only thus at the ending, for the world is changing. I feel it in the water, I feel it in the earth, and I smell it in the air. I do not think we shall meet again.
And Celeborn said,
I do not know, eldest.
But Galadriel said, Not in Middle-earth, nor until the lands that lie under the wave are lifted up again. Then in the willow meads of Tasarnan we may meet in the spring. Farewell. Last of all, Merry and Pippin said goodbye to the old Ent, and he grew gayer as he looked at them.
Well, my merry folk, he said, will you drink another draught with me before you go?
Indeed we will, they said, and he took them aside into the shade of one of the trees, and there they saw that a great stone jar had been set, and Treebeard filled three bowls, and they drank. And they saw his strange eyes looking at them over the rim of his bowl.
Take care, he said, for you have already grown since I saw you last.
And they laughed and drained their bowls.
Well, goodbye, he said, and don't forget that if you hear any news of the Entwives in your land, you will send word to me.
Then he waved his great hands to all the company and went off into the trees. The travellers now rode with more speed, and they made their way towards the Gap of Rohan. And Aragorn took leave of them at last, close to that very place where Pippin had looked into the stone of Orthonk. The hobbits were grieved at this parting, for Aragorn had never failed them, and he had been their guide through many perils. I wish we could have a stone that we could see all our friends in, said Pippin, and that we could speak to them from far away.
Only one now remains that you could use, answered Aragorn, for you would not wish to see what the stone of Minas Tirith would show you. But the Palantir of Orthonk the king will keep, to see what is passing in his realm and what his servants are doing. For do not forget, Peregrine Took, that you are a knight of Gondor, and I do not release you from your service. You are going now on leave, but I may recall you. And remember, dear friends of the Shire, that my realm lies also in the north, and I shall come there one day.
Then Aragorn took leave of Celeborn and Galadriel, and the lady said to him, Elfstone, through darkness you have come to your hope, and have now all your desire. Use well the days. But Celeborn said,
Kinsman, farewell. May your doom be other than mine, and your treasure remain with you to the end.
With that they parted, and it was then the time of sunset. And when, after a while, they turned and looked back, they saw the King of the West sitting upon his horse with his knights about him, and the falling sun shone upon them, and made all their harness to gleam like red gold, and the white mantle of Aragorn was turned to a flame. Then Aragorn took the green stone and held it up, and there came a green fire from his hand. Soon the dwindling company, following the Isen, turned west and rolled through the gap into the wastelands beyond, and then they turned northwards and passed over the borders of Dunland. The Dunlendings fled and hid themselves, for they were afraid of elvish folk, though few indeed ever came to their country. But the travellers did not heed them, for they were still a great company, and were well provided with all that they needed, and they went on their way at their leisure, setting up their tents when they would. On the sixth day since their parting from the king, they journeyed through a wood, climbing down from the hills at the feet of the misty mountains that now marched on their right hand. As they came out again into the open country at sundown, they overtook an old man leaning on a staff, and he was clothed in rags of grey or dirty white, and at his heels went another beggar, slouching and whining.
"Well, Saruman," said Gandalf, "where are you going?"
"What is that to you?" he answered. "Will you still order my goings, and are you not content with my ruin?"
"You know the answers," said Gandalf. "No and no. But in any case the time of my labours now draws to an end. The king has taken on the burden. If you had waited at Orthonk, you would have seen him, and he would have shown you wisdom and mercy."
"Then all the more reason to have left sooner," said Saruman, "for I desire neither of him. Indeed, if you wish for an answer to your first question, I am seeking a way out of his realm."
"Then once more you are going the wrong way,"
said Gandalf, "and I see no hope in your journey. But will you scorn our help, for we offer it to you?"
"To me?" said Saruman. "Nay, pray do not smile at me. I prefer your frowns, and as for the lady here, I don't trust her. She always hated me, and schemed for your part. I don't doubt that she has brought you this way to have the pleasure of gloating over my poverty. Had I been warned of your pursuit, I would have denied you the pleasure."
"Saruman," said Galadriel, "we have other errands, and other cares that seem to us more urgent than hunting for you. Say rather that you are overtaken by good fortune, for now you have a last chance."
"If it be truly the last, I'm glad," said Saruman, "for I shall be spared the trouble of refusing it again. Oh, my hopes are ruined, but I would not share yours, if you have any."
For a moment his eyes kindled.
"Go," he said. "I did not spend long study on these matters for naught. You've doomed yourselves, and you know it. And it will afford me some comfort as I wander to think that you pulled down your own house when you destroyed mine. And now, what ship will bear you back across so wide a sea?" he mocked. "It will be a grey ship, and full of ghosts." He laughed, but his voice was cracked and hideous.
"Get up, you idiot!" he shouted to the other beggar, who had sat down on the ground, and he struck him with his staff. "Turn about! If these fine folk are going our way, then we will take another. Get on, or I'll give you no crust for your supper."
The beggar turned and slouched past, whimpering.
"Poor old dreamer! Poor old dreamer! Always beaten and cursed. How I hate him. I wish I could leave him."
"Then leave him," said Gandalf.
But Wormtongue only shot a glance of his bleared eyes full of terror at Gandalf, and then shuffled quickly past behind Saruman. As the wretched pair passed by the company, they came to the hobbits, and Saruman stopped and stared at them, but they looked at him with pity.
"So you've come to gloat too, have you, my urchins?" he said. "You don't care what a beggar lacks, do you? For you've all you want, food and fine clothes and the best weed for your pipes. Oh, yes, I know. I know where it comes from. You wouldn't give a pipeful to a beggar, would you?"
"I would if I had any," said Frodo. "You can have what I've got left," said Merry, "if you'll wait a moment." He got down and searched in the back of his saddle. Then he handed to Saruman a leather pouch. "Take what there is," he said. "You're welcome to it. It came from the flotsam of Isengard."
"Mine, mine, yes, and dearly bought," cried Saruman, clutching at the pouch. "This is only a repayment in token, for you took more, I'll be bound. Still, a beggar must be grateful, if a thief returns him even a morsel of his own. Well, it will serve you right when you come home, if you find things less good in the south farthing than you would like. Long may your land be short of leaf."
"Thank you," said Merry. "In that case, I'll have my pouch back, which is not yours, and has journeyed far with me. Wrap the weed in a rag of your own."
"One thief deserves another," said Saruman, and turned his back on Merry and kicked Wormtongue and went away towards the wood.
"Well, I like that," said Pippin. "Thief indeed! What of our claim for waylaying, wounding, and orc dragging us through Rohan?"
"Ah," said Sam.
"And bought," he said. "How, I wonder?
And I didn't like the sound of what he said about the South Farthing. It's time we got back."
"I'm sure it is," said Frodo. "But we can't go any quicker if we're to see Bilbo. I'm going to Rivendell first, whatever happens."
"Yes, I think you'd better do that," said Gandalf. "But alas for Saruman, I fear nothing more can be made of him. He's withered altogether. All the same, I'm not sure that Treebeard is right. I fancy he could do some mischief still in a small, mean way."
Next day they went on into the northern Dunland, where no men now dwelt, though it was a green and pleasant country. September came in with golden days and silver nights, and they rode at ease until they reached the Swanfleet River, and found the old ford east of the falls where it went down suddenly into the lowlands. Far to the west in a haze lay the meres and eyots through which it wound its way to the grey flood. There countless swans housed in a land of reeds. So they passed into a region, and at last a fair morning dawned, shimmering above gleaming mists. And looking from their camp on a low hill, the travellers saw, away in the east, the sun catching three peaks that thrust up into the sky through floating clouds. Carathras, Celebdil, and Fanuithol. They were near to the gates of Moria. Here now for 7 days they tarried, for the time was at hand for another parting, which they were loath to make. Soon Celeborn and Galadriel and their folk would turn eastward, and so pass by the Redhorn Gate, and down the Dimrill Stair to the Silverlode, and to their own country. They had journeyed thus far by the westways, for they had much to speak of with Elrond and with Gandalf, and here they lingered still in converse with their friends. Often, long after the hobbits were wrapped in sleep, they would sit together under the stars, recalling the ages that were gone and all their joys and labours in the world, or holding counsel concerning the days to come. If any wanderer had chanced to pass, little would he have seen or heard, and it would have seemed to him only that he saw grey figures carved in stone, memorials of forgotten things now lost in unpeopled lands. For they didn't move or speak with mouth, looking from mind to mind, and only their shining eyes stirred and kindled as their thoughts went to and fro. But at length all was said, and they parted again for a while, until it was time for the three rings to pass away. Quickly fading into the stones and the shadows, the grey-cloaked people of Lorien rode towards the mountains, and those who were going to Rivendell sat on the hill and watched, until there came out of the gathering mist a flash, and then they saw no more. Frodo knew that Galadriel had held aloft her ring in token of farewell. Sam turned away and sighed. "I wish I was going back to Lorien." At last, one evening, they came over the high moors, suddenly, as to travellers it always seemed, to the brink of the deep valley of Rivendell, and saw, far below, the lamp shining in Elrond's house. And they went down, and crossed the bridge, and came to the doors, and all the house was filled with light and song for joy at Elrond's homecoming. First of all, before they had eaten or washed or even shed their cloaks, the hobbits went in search of Bilbo. They found him all alone in his little room. It was littered with papers and pens and pencils, but Bilbo was sitting in a chair before a small bright fire. He looked very old, but peaceful and sleepy. He opened his eyes and looked up as they came in.
"Hello, hello," he said. "So you've come back. And tomorrow's my birthday, too. How clever of you. Do you know, I shall be 129, and in 1 year more, if I'm spared, I shall equal the old Took. I should like to beat him, but we shall see."
After the celebration of Bilbo's birthday, the four hobbits stayed in Rivendell for some days, and they sat much with their old friend, who spent most of his time now in his room, except at meals. For these he was still very punctual as a rule, and he seldom failed to wake up in time for them. Sitting round the fire, they told him in turn all that they could remember of their journeys and adventures. At first he pretended to take some notes, but he often fell asleep, and when he woke he would say,
"How splendid! How wonderful! But where were we?"
Then they went on with the story from the point where he had begun to nod. The only part that seemed really to rouse him and hold his attention was the account of the crowning and marriage of Aragorn.
"I was invited to the wedding, of course," he said, "and I waited for it long enough, but somehow, when it came to it,
I found I had so much to do here, and packing is such a bother.
When nearly a fortnight had passed, Frodo looked out of his window and saw that there had been a frost in the night, and the cobwebs were like white nets. Then suddenly he knew that he must go and say goodbye to Bilbo. The weather was still calm and fair after one of the most lovely summers that people could remember. But October had come, and it must break soon and begin to rain and blow again. And there was still a very long way to go. Yet it was not really the thought of the weather that stirred him. He had a feeling that it was time he went back to the Shire. Sam shared it. Only the night before he had said,
"Well, Mr. Frodo, we've been far and seen a deal, and yet I don't think we've found a better place than this. There's something of everything here, if you understand me. The Shire and the Golden Wood and Gondor and King's Houses and Inns and Meadows and Mountains all mixed. And yet, somehow, I feel we ought to be going soon. I'm worried about my gaffer, to tell you the truth."
"Yes, something of everything, Sam, except the sea," Frodo had answered, and he'd repeated it now to himself. "Except the sea."